Welcome to Hello Dogtown.
We have our special guest, Jai.
My name is Jai Alanis. I'm originally from Sydney, Australia. I now live in Los Angeles, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of the Creative Futures Collective.
Charles is also here.
Yes, Charles is here.
So Jai, would you like to go ahead and dive into a little bit of what your organization is and what it does?
So Creative Futures, what do we do? We do a lot of things, but essentially our mission and our goal is we're looking to unearth kind of like the next generation of creative leaders that have come from underserved or disadvantaged communities or backgrounds and help those fellows kind of, you know, break cycles of systemic inequality, specifically through finding careers in the creative industry. So music, film, TV, sports, tech, et cetera. And yeah, we work with a group of talents that has the passion and the drive and the tenacity and the resilience, but just maybe for whatever reason, with circumstances outside of their control, has had the opportunity, and especially in those industries, to break into because, you know, they weren't born into the right neighborhood, have the right family connections, or went to the right schools. We are essentially becoming that opportunity pathway for people. And on the flip side, we work with organizations, companies, and we help them with their kind of, you know, diversity, inclusion, and equity initiatives to help get more diverse voices into the room.
Awesome. So when you get these minorities and people of color in these low-income communities, these members or participants that go ahead, how would you combat the frustration that they carry and the heaviness that they carry inside, knowing that the system wasn't built for them? As I know you provide these other workshops, but how do you necessarily combat that sense of hopelessness within them?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. And I'll unpack it as well as I can by starting with like the process of how we kind of, how we find them. We call it the talent or our fellows. But when we talk to companies, we say the talent. So the way that we work is we're not a charity ourselves, right? We do have nonprofit status under a fiscal sponsor, but we're not set out to be a charity. What we do is we team up with separate different nonprofits, and we've got about 50, maybe more nonprofit partners around the city. And then what we do is then we go out to each of those nonprofits and we say, hey, we're running another 12-week program. Have you got any people, members, as you say, that would be interested in applying for this program? And then people apply for the program. We go through, we shortlist, we interview, and then, you know, we select. We're pretty selective. We take in currently 10 people per cohort. And yeah, the idea is that there's two sides to your question. One side is like, we aren't caseworkers, right? So that's one of the reasons why we work with different nonprofits. So for example, Charles was in the program, and he came through Safe Place for Youth, which is one of our partners. Now, I've known Charles even before he was in our program. I've known him for years, and I can dive into that because Safe Place for Youth is one of the first organizations that I started working with when I moved out here from Australia. But the idea is that Charles is with Safe Place for Youth. So if there was an issue or Charles was going through some sort of, I don't know, trauma or something was going on, we would actually revert to the organization and say, hey, this is going on with Charles. And then the organization, Safe Place for Youth, is much better equipped to handle what's going on. Now, saying that though, we haven't really ever had to do that, to be honest. Maybe once or twice, but not really. Essentially, we are here to provide hope. We're bringing people in and we're saying, hey, look, we understand that the system has been designed, and it is by design, to hold you back, whether it's the color of your skin or your gender or your ability or whatever it is. It's designed like that on purpose. We've basically, figured out ways to break down some of those barriers, and we're going to do that for you. And by being part of our community and being part of our family, not only will we open doors for you, but we'll be there to support you as well. Because we know that, just say, because we are working on the employment side of things, we don't just like drop talent off at an office to do their internship and say, good luck, see you later. Because we know it's not going to be successful for the talent and also for the company. You know, this is, I wouldn't say this is new, but a lot of organizations, companies, again, will talk about, you know, how diversity and inclusion is such a priority for them and blah, 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 blah. But a lot of the times these companies aren't ready. They're not welcoming places. They're not equitable places. So there's this huge kind of education and support piece that has to be done on both sides. And I kind of compare it to, you know, like first generation college students. There's a huge failure rate, right? Drop-off rate with first generation college students. A lot of the times because first generation college students may come from, you know, lower income backgrounds. So there's more pressure and stress on them to even be able to get through school, whether they're there on a scholarship, but they've got to, like, you know, they've got to support themselves. So maybe they have to get jobs. Maybe they've got to help with their families, whatever it is. There's added stresses of survival and daily living that kind of just goes, okay, well, this is too hard for me. And the second piece is there's that kind of imposter syndrome that happens, right? So people going into a place where not a lot of other people like look or sound like them, maybe you think this isn't an environment for me. So essentially what we try to do, and I think we do it, is provide our fellows, our talent, with hope. We don't think that we're necessarily making them like smarter or harder working, because we know the talent's already there. Hence when we identify that talent to bring into the program, a lot of it's about confidence. So what can we do? How can we design our curriculum? How can we design a program? How can we design the mentorship to harness that confidence, pull the confidence out of them so you go, hey, you know, I can do this. And then provide the tools and resources around them. So that's the support, that's the mentorship, that's the opportunity. And I think that's how we get around that.
That's a lot. That's amazing. So tell us how you got started then. How did this org, what is its origin story?
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of it kind of has to do with Charles in a sense. Like Charles, mm-hmm. Charles has been there from day dot. But I moved out here 2016 and I was running a company called Locals. And what we would do is we would kind of do these experiences for companies as like team building activities. So for example, like Uber was one of our clients. And we might take like their executives surfing with a pro surfer for the day as a team builder. So I was out here and I was doing that. We worked with like Uber and Salesforce and PayPal, and we worked in a bunch of like big tech companies. What we started doing when we moved out here was we thought, okay, well, if Uber in this example is going to pay for these experiences, we should then like open these experiences up to a nonprofit that we work with. And in this case, it was Safe Place for You. So that's how I got introduced to Charles. And I don't think Charles was at this one that we did, but I can give a perfect example of one, and kind of Creative Futures was born out of it. So we did this one experience with this skateboard photographer called Atiba Jefferson. And he's like one of the most prolific skateboard photographers in the world. Anyone that skates knows who he is. And he's like legendary photographer. So we did this experience where the Uber executives got to learn how to shoot skate photos with Atiba downtown LA. We called up Rachel at Spy and said, hey, we've got this experience. Have you got any youth that would want to come and learn to shoot, you know, photos with Atiba? She's like, absolutely. So we had Lisa and some other people come down to learn how to shoot photos. And we had some like really good skateboarders from Spy come down and get shot. Like, and I always say to people, like, you know, if you're a young skater and you're getting like a portfolio put together by Atiba, it's like, that's just mental to even think about. But that's what happened. But the experience was great. So like Atiba's there, everyone's like interacting, learning how to shoot skate photos. We got some really great group photos. Baker Skateboards got involved and gave everyone like free skateboard decks and clothes. And this was just before Christmas as well. And it was really cool. We filmed it and it was really awesome. But the takeaway for me was, well, what happens tomorrow, right? Like the real value went to the company. The value went to Uber because they kind of pat themselves in the back about, you know, this great engaging day that they had with, you know, some of the youth from Spy. But then they get to go back to their bubbles in, you know, Santa Monica and Venice and go back to their, you know, pretty nice lives, really. And what happened to, you know, the youth that was down there? Like, well, you know, they're still unhoused. They're still trying to find meaningful employment, you know, all those sorts of things. So for us, it was, well, you know, if we're going to be doing this stuff, it's got to have a tangible outcome. It's got to have a longer lasting impact. It's not just about like, okay, you've got this great experience today. Don't get me wrong. If you spoke to anyone that was there that day, I'd say that day was amazing. Like it was mm-hmm. great, but it wasn't longer lasting. So what we started to do after that was like, how could we do these experiences that we're using to create employment opportunities? And that's where Charles got involved. We had Charles do a photography experience with us with a guy called Esteban Oriol, another kind of legendary photographer in LA. So Charles was part of that. But then the next experience we did with Charles was we did this Super Bowl party with Ricky Williams.
Oh, yeah. that was crazy.
Yeah. And we rented like a mansion in the Hollywood Hills. And for anyone listening, Ricky Williams is a former professional NFL player. So we had a party for him, and it was like kind of like a cannabis friendly party up in the Hollywood Hills. And Charles works for us for the day, so we paid Charles to kind of like be helping hand, because we need extra hands on deck. So the idea was that we could use our company and these experiences to create employment opportunities again for the communities that work with it. And Spies definitely was one of our first partners. So. Yeah, we just started doing these experiences and you know, we've I don't know if anyone here knows like Mahalia, but we brought Mahalia in as well to work on stuff. Mm-hmm. So it went into that. And then last year we took it a step further, and this is also what Charles was part of, but we decided that, okay, again, just working for us for the day and getting like, you know, cash in hand, it's great, but where's it leading? So we said, let's try and formalize this and just, you know, make it a little bit more impactful. So we created like a 12-week program with a curriculum, all based around, again, the confidence piece. So how can we know the talent, so how can we pull the confidence out? And what we're looking for is creativity, imagination, and empathy. And for a few reasons. One of the reasons is that, I mean, if you look at businesses now and companies and what they're investing in, they're investing trillions of dollars into like artificial intelligence and machine learning and stuff like that. So what we want to do is, with the talent that comes through and the fellows that come through, we kind of want to be like, well, what aren't machines going to be able to like replicate? They're not going to be able to replicate empathy, and they're not going to be able to replicate humans' creativity. So that's part of the reason. And the other part of the reason around the creative industries is, you know, I started a record label when I was 16. I sold to EMI when I was 24. I didn't go to university. I didn't go to college. You do not need a four-year college degree to become a marketing coordinator at any company. You don't need a college degree for 99% of the jobs out there, but especially in the creative industries. And the creative industries, there's so much nepotism around there. So it is like who you know, who your family is, what school you went to, what networks you plugged into. And we just know that, one, it's, I can't swear, two, that... if you keep bringing the same people into the room, it's groupthink. You're not getting new ideas. You're not getting new insights. You're not getting new perspectives. And that hurts businesses. That hurts everyone. That hurts consumers. Like, so for us, we were like, well, look at all this lived experience that is out there and all these talents out there that just have the opportunity. That's a business opportunity for businesses. So when we talk to them, we don't talk about this is a charitable thing to do. This is the right thing to do. This is not a handout. This is like you're bringing people into your company that are going to provide you with the insights that no one in the room has any idea about here, and that's going to help you. I mean, there's already data out there. The data says that companies that embrace diverse teams are 70% more likely to capture new markets. Now, that makes sense, I guess. It does, but you don't need data to prove that. If you have people with different experiences, it just makes sense that, you know, people are going to think different and new ideas are going to come out of that. So, yeah, so we built this program. The 12-week program, we went out with applications. Charles was one of the 10 fellows that kind of came in, and this was like, you know, a year ago. We built up a mentor network of executives from like Apple, Google, Spotify, CAA, the World Surf League, William Morris, Netflix, Vice, like all these companies. We built up a mentor network, and we did our best to match the fellows and the talent with what they were looking to break into. And then at the end of it, we had this thing called a futureship, which is essentially just a guaranteed paid internship that each of the fellows that comes through the program gets to do. So the idea is, after 12 weeks or 16 weeks, if you include the internship, futureship, you walk out with a resume that says, I did an internship with the World Surf League, and my references are, you know, Sarah from Google and John from Apple. And yeah, here I go. And that doesn't cost you $150,000 and take 4 years of your life. Because really, you just need the experience. Like that's how you're going to get ahead. You need your foot in the door. And people say, well, we want these people to have experience. Well, how do they get experience? So we're trying to figure out our own way. And I'll say one last thing about that is, we call it a futureship because when we went around to companies originally, we wanted to get internships at these companies, and we had so much pushback from companies because a lot of the talent that we had weren't at school. They weren't going to college, and a lot of companies, their internship programs are designed for college kids. One, because they either don't have to pay them because they can do it for school credits, or these companies, to me, it's a discriminatory hiring practice because it basically excludes a whole lot of people from, again, getting in the door. And if you want to, again, talk about the system and how rigged it is and designed to hold people back and oppress people, I mean, I'm from Australia, so rich or poor, when you're born, you have everyone, every single person in the country has basic level human right to healthcare. You don't have that in this country, and it's mind-blowing. It's absolutely mind-blowing that that exists. So how do you get healthcare in this country? You have a good job. How do you get a good job? You've got to go to this school. The whole system is designed that way on purpose. And like companies out there right now talking about like BLM and all this sort of stuff that are pledging like hundreds of millions of dollars to different nonprofits, they're still the companies that, again, are pledging money to nonprofits because they've already got that money allocated, earmarked for charitable donation. So they pay less tax than they already do. But they're also, they're advocates for wanting to pay for their employees' health insurance because it gives them leverage for keeping employees, for retention and for being able, attract people instead of going, no, the government should provide healthcare for everybody, which is what should happen.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm curious to see how now during like with all the chaos going on and seeing how your program is a lot of like collaborating and engagement, would it now turn like via like Zoom online, or how does that work now for those who would like to participate?
Yeah, so we had to adapt to that. We were going to do two in-person cohorts this year, one LA and one in New York. LA was meant to launch in March. This was the week just before everything kind of shut down. We made the decision before everything shut down to postpone our program because, well, one, we didn't know what was going on, but also we have a lot of people in our program that, come from some of the most vulnerable communities. A lot of them either live in transitional housing or have young children or live with elderly people. And we just didn't want to, not just our fellows, but also their families and their communities at risk. So we postponed, and then we decided to launch in June, but just do online only. So we've been doing all our workshops on Zoom. When Charles did the program last year, we did it at WeWork in Culver City. So everyone on a Tuesday night would kind of come down and be part of these workshops. But for now, it's all done on Zoom, and we get to the future ships around, I think, September, October. So we'll see what the world looks like then. But we've adapted, and it's actually been really good.
That's awesome. Charles, I'm curious, your side of the experiencing the program. Is there anything how you felt going through it and anything you got from it? Clearly, you're still connected, which is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I really loved it. I just felt like, my personal experience was kind of just like, I feel like you get out of an opportunity what you put into it. So it's this opportunity, this great opportunity that you're being presented with, and you just have to like really go after it. And I unfortunately had other things already kind of planned out, so I didn't want to abandon that, but it was a great opportunity. I met some great people, some good contacts, and I feel that if in the future I were to apply at WSO, I probably wouldn't have a good shot. And that's awesome. That's like a dream come true. So I'm forever grateful to the program and just looking for ways that I could assist in the future. I actually plugged a friend of mine into it, and he's now like doing like his dream job or something, like working in a studio with some crazy producer or something. He like goes there every day, literally doesn't take a day off. He's just there every day. And I'm like, what do you do? He's like, I just do what I always do, but for money. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah. He's like, I'm just in the studio all day, bro, with the legends. I'm like, damn, okay. So yeah, I mean, I'm forever in awe because it's actually equitable. It's not like It's not like your average run-of-the-mill program, and they're like, oh, we're going to show them how to write a resume and pat them on the back and give them a certificate. It's like actually some, like, it's a possibility that you could make something out of it. You just got to put the work into it. So, yeah, that's what I'll say.
That's awesome. I mean, I think what's really cool to hear about your program is how you leverage, you know, the connections that you've made in the business world. And it's fascinating to hear when we hear people step out of the nonprofit charity world and bridge those connections and do it in a way that is really empowering rather than, yeah, like you said, it's not like just a handout or a thing that people do for a photo op type of thing. Why don't more people do that, I guess, is the question.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, there's so many people, especially like with everything that's going on right now in the world and in America, you know, when the BLM stuff and the George Floyd stuff started scratching kind of the surface and blowing up, you had a lot of people saying, what can I do to help? You know, how can I help? And then I'm talking about like, say, people that come from privilege. What can I do to help? And, you know, I always think it's so weird. One of the things that I loved about moving to America was how open people are to connecting you with people. Like in Australia, it's different. I don't know, the mentality is different. People are more protective of their networks, but what they don't understand, and I think it's to detriment of culture in Australia as far as business is concerned, is that like if you connect with people, it's good for you in a sense. You know what I mean? Like if you forge a relationship with other people, and something good comes out of that, people will remember that you did that and maybe good karma comes your way or whatever it is. But so I'd go into meetings when I first moved with you about not really knowing who's sitting across from me. And I'd tell them what I'm doing. I'm like, oh, you've got to meet blah, blah, blah. And right then and there, they'd get their phone out, write an email and connect me with someone. And that still happens to this day. And I love that about here. But you know what happens, and I also notice, is like no one's doing that for people that need it the most, right? So you've got all these people that, like, I went to USC. I've got this alumni network. It's like, help. That's the best way you can help. You have opportunity at your fingertips. Like, and I can guarantee you, like, a lot of the people don't do that stuff. And look, I get it to an extent. People say, well, I don't know the person. Like, so that's what we're trying to do. Is like, okay, well, if you want to help, if you know, an introduction that you make could change someone's life, and you get to be part of that journey. So what we're essentially doing is we're going, hey, here's this talent. We've kind of got this talent into the program. We're putting ourselves on the line as far as going, you know, it's kind of our word. But please, can you help out? And that's just the easiest thing that you could do. Like, how many times have you had a family member say, hey, my colleague's young daughter's graduating college, and do you know of any jobs are going at your company? And you'd be like, oh, I'll check it out for you. You know, like, imagine people did that for people that actually need it. Because that's the investment into communities. That's actually breaking cycles of, again, the systemic inequality. So for us, that's a big thing. And we want to get more people thinking that way. More people thinking, okay, I'm good at something. I have knowledge, I have skills, I have time, and I have a network. How can I use those to actually like push things forward? That's true allyship.
So that being said, I agree with you because I feel like I learn more being like on hands on versus like just sitting there and like learning. And I feel like having hands on is what a lot of us needs, you know, like you said in the beginning, we have to go to school and sit there and go get a piece of paper, a degree to tell us that we're able and capable to do what we learn. But I believe that in essence, through life experiences and going through, you know, the flow of life and the obstacles that it comes hands on is what really teaches us and really like builds our skills, you know. And like, what would you say like makes your organization unique and like what sets you apart from the rest?
Yeah, look, I don't know, to be honest, because I don't know enough about other programs and what they do, as far as their internal workings are concerned. But I just know that our program has been designed from actually having experience building companies and working in the creative industry. So like I said, having started a record label when I was really young, with no family connections, no money, no nothing, no network at all, and figuring that out, kind of using those experiences to be like, I don't know, I want to call them shortcuts, but kind of like figure out ways to go about it, or relationships that I've had for, you know, 17, 18 years that are still involved in what I'm doing today that I met so long ago, and how fostering those relationships is one of the most important things you can do, and how that plugs into your network. So I would just say it's a lot of lived experience. And then we obviously have like my co-founder, Marky, and the company, he's also from Australian companies he's built. And now Yani, who was one of our fellows, and she's a co-founder in the company now as well, System Impacted. Her experiences are massive to how we kind of design and build our curriculum and our program. So as far as what other people are doing, I don't know, because I just don't know enough about what they do. But I know that like what we're doing, the opportunities that we're presenting to our fellows are like pretty massive.
I would chime in on that too and say that your organization, Jai, isn't the kind of organization that really has competition. You know, it's like, if anything, you know, the more the better. So, you know.
Absolutely. You guys are doing great. Yeah, the more people out there like doing what we're doing, or in other ways. Like I know there are organizations that do things in kind of other verticals. But absolutely, the more opportunities, more bridges we can build, the better. So there's definitely, there's nothing competitive. But essentially what we're trying to do, the program to us is kind of like, the program to us is a bridge, because what we're interested in from like our company and our business is we want to have the best talent available to be placing them at companies that are ready to create more equitable workforces. So the program's just helping us get there. So everything that we do with the program is not like, you know, for example, we didn't do this when, like, you know, with the program Charles was in, because Charles was in the first of our like 12-week cohorts. Now we're kind of in our third of those. We did two last year. Yeah, we're in our third one. So you just learn. You learn so much from like the internships, the mentors, getting feedback from the mentors, and also the program itself. But now we're kind of realizing we know that the creativity is kind of what makes our talent brilliant. And creativity could be in so many different ways. It could be creative thinker, writer, cooking, acting, whatever it is, music. But we also know that we need a baseline of skills for our fellows to have. And that's just like simple things like, you know, email etiquette, being able, you know, using certain tools like Slack and Dropbox and Google Drive and Office Suite and all this sort of stuff. So we're plugging that into our programming just to make sure that like when we do talk to companies, we say our fellows have like a baseline understanding of this and this, but it's really their creativity is their brilliance and their insights. That's really the asset. But if you gave them this task, they're going to be able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that tends to be a thing, emails and all those skills that we take for granted often, that often aren't taught, that are so important. And I hear a lot of programs integrating stuff like that now, which I think is really great. My question is, are most of the young people that you work with, are they unhoused or have experience of, you know, homelessness, or is that just an area that cross-sects most things?
I wouldn't say everybody, because we're quite agnostic when it comes to the organizations that we work with. So it's like, you know, SPY is an organization that we work with. We also work with an organization, one of the first two organizations that I met and worked with when I moved here was Safe Place Youth and another place called A New Way of Life, which is a re-entry program for formerly incarcerated women. Uh-huh. So they were like the first organizations that we worked with. Now we work with, like I said, like 50 organizations around the city. And they're all different. So we don't focus too much on, I don't even know how to say the vertical.
Like an issue area. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just supporting across the city.
Yeah.
But city of Los Angeles. Yeah.
Yeah. So for example, like we say, when we talk to anyone, we say, we don't consider diversity, the color of someone's skin, their gender or sexual orientation. However, I will say that 99% of the people that have come through the program are people of color. I don't know the percentage for system impacted, but most people have been system impacted, but actually the foster care system, and I know this applies, a lot of, you know, the members are people that have aged out of the system there. We have people that, you know, have been formerly incarcerated, people with different ability levels. But I would say that we've had quite a few people that have lived through homelessness. And like I mentioned, we had, you know, 4 women in our program last year that were all in transitional housing, and all single mothers as well. So, yeah, it's a big, I mean, you know, the cost of living in the city is just ridiculous.
I think it's something, of course, our podcast is, we try to, find the experience of homelessness and houselessness is something that is a through line through our podcast. And it's somewhat of like what we're trying to dive into in each episode, but, it's also really, you know, it's unavoidable in Los Angeles you would have to really avoid it to avoid the issue at all. In thinking and being in conversation about the crisis of homelessness in the city. So I guess, you know, some questions, it seems like the approach to your program and breaking the cycle is getting to the broader challenge of ending homelessness in the city. But if you have any other, you know, insights or thoughts like of what could be important for Los Angeles as we keep going forward.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many things, right? And what we realized early on, we were like, okay, our mission is to break cycles of systemic inequality. That was our mission. And early this year, we kind of scratched that. We said, you know what? It shouldn't be us that does that. It should be our fellows, because they're the ones that have that lived experience, and they're the ones that are best equipped. Now, the issue is obviously most of the people that we meet that come through our program, they're in survival mode. So even though they might want to fix the problem of affordable housing or, you know, whatever it is, they're still trying to put food on the table, put a roof over their heads for themselves and their families. So we kind of changed our mission a little bit to be, we're unearthing the next generation of leaders so that they can break the cycles of systemic inequality that they've personally experienced. We're just here to be the conduit. We're here to build a bridge, give the support network, give the tools and resources to help them do that, because they're the ones that are best equipped to do it. I think if you look at a lot of issues that have, this has been to the test of time, but if you look at a lot of issues in any city, not just LA, but any city, there's always this kind of like white knight approach to it, right? There's always like this, I'm well-educated, I'm this, I'm that, and I'm going to have the solutions. And it's always like this bottom-down approach. Top-down approach. And it just doesn't really work all the time. It needs to be a collaboration. But you need to have real buy-in and real investment. And not just kind of like you said, like photo opportunities and figureheads and stuff like that. That, okay, this person's been system impacted. We'll put them on the advisory board just to show we're doing this. It's got to be real, like they should be driving it. And the government or whoever has kind of the power and the resources should be supporting that. That's what we believe. So that's how we look at it. And our thing is like, again, going back to employment does so much more than just provide a paycheck. As you know, it provides purpose. Helen, you said hope. When there's hopelessness, it provides hope, especially if it's a career. And it impacts more than just themselves. It impacts their families, impacts their communities. And that's simple things like having access to healthcare, but also just, you know, being, I remember Michelle, who is one of our earlier fellows in the program. She's a formerly incarcerated woman of color, and she was out of prison 6 months. She wanted to be a chef. Basically we connected her with a chef to do like a four week paid traineeship in the commercial kitchen. Out of that 4 week paid traineeship, she ended up getting a job as a chef. And this is 2017. So 3 years later, she's still a chef. And it completely changed her life in more ways than one, not just because she was able to like get her own apartment and like, you know, provide for her family and that. But it was also like, because she now had a career and she was passionate about something, that fed down to her kids. For example, her kids they were kind of like, I don't know, you know, we can follow our dreams and our passions. But also the other women that were in the program at A New Way of Life, like she would go back there weekly and kind of cook meals for them. And she kind of became the, well, if I can do it, you can do it too, you know, and that's such a big part. So that's why we're focused on the employment business. One, we have a network we can tap into and we can provide opportunities, but we know that the greatest systems are going to be broken down, not necessarily going to be broken down by us, but it's going to be broken down by the challenges of the world. And how can we support them to that? It's actually a requirement to even get into Creative Futures that you have to have a desire to pay it forward and have it, and we can help, you know, design a strategy about what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. It's a big part of what we do.
You anticipate any challenges from here on forward? Have you had any challenges or barriers before that you're still currently like struggling with?
Yeah, I mean, yes, always challenges, and there always will be. I mean, like I was saying before, and maybe I got sidetracked, when we would go to companies and ask for internships, because that's, you know, that's as entry level as you can get, really, we kept getting pushback because our talent, our fellows weren't at school and they only did internship programs for college students. So that was annoying because we obviously wanted these opportunities for the people that have gone through the program. So we had to end up creating our own thing called a futureship. So where we just said, basically, we'll do one day a week for 4 weeks, pay $20 an hour, and we'll pay our fellow. We'll just contract, like our company and your company will have an agreement together, but you don't have to be, you're not responsible for the fellow going on payroll, liability, all that sort of stuff. We'll hold that. You just open the door. And the way that we did it was we worked with certain individuals that were like kind of high up the companies that would say, yeah, this person coming one day, we kind of like shadow me around, or, you know. That was how we got around having to like go through the red tape and the hierarchy of like dealing with HR and dealing with these perks and, you know, having to get buy-in, all this sort of stuff. We found a loophole. But even then it wasn't super easy, but we were very fortunate. Like, you know, in the first round, we got the Lakers on board and Spotify and the World Surf League, which was amazing. And obviously that helped us open other doors. And then, so that was last year. And then, you know, even this year, with COVID coming along and, you know, companies furloughing employees or letting go of employees or not having offices open, a lot of companies have, with their internship programs specifically, have put them on hold or just aren't hiring at all. So we were like, oh, this is going to be really tough for us. Like, how are we going to figure this out? Especially as well because, you know, with entry-level jobs or the kind of the jobs that we're looking for, we're now competing with a whole bunch of people that do have more experience and did go to those schools and are now unemployed. So that was something for us that, you know, it didn't deter us, but we definitely had to think about it and keep it front of mind. And then, you know, George Floyd happened and every company in America decided that, you know, it was important now to prioritize, you know, the diverse talent and have them removed. So all of a sudden when that happened, even though we had COVID kind of working against us, there was now an opportunity that companies wanted talent that we had brought through our program in their buildings, whether it's for internships or for hiring. So the last month has been pretty intense in a good way because companies are now being forced to listen, I guess. So something we've been working on for years and fighting for years is now a front of mind topic. So that's kind of like, you know, that's just the world went that way, but the world didn't go that way by accident. You know, COVID unlayered the systemic inequalities that exist. And if you saw like the data around everything, you know, it was generally people of color and specifically in Black communities that were disproportionately being affected by COVID through health and sickness. And that peeled back a huge layer. And then obviously, you know, the BLM stuff, and it really just exposed the system for what it was, which is, you know, a discriminatory system designed to hold people back. So the fact that companies are now willing to have those conversations and make them top priority and have them now it's great. But yeah, again, just going back to all these companies and their pledges and $100 million here and $100 million there, making their donations, their tax-free donations that essentially just help them pay less tax than they already do. If you were to ask me, and I do say this to companies when we talk to them, we don't mince our words. If you want to make a true investment into a community, hire people in that community. Give them, and not just frontline jobs, careers, and invest in those careers and invest in those people. It will come back to help your business anyway. It is an investment. But that will change things.
Yeah, that I feel like that's come up in every of the episodes that we've recorded in the past month, is this how COVID and the pandemic did it peeled back the curtain. Some things that a lot of us have been talking about for a really long time, all of a sudden it just shined the light on all of this, and people were able to, it exposed the inequities that existed and now have just really strained that even more so. But I think that exposure is good, and hopefully we'll be able to capitalize on it and keep people motivated for doing the work. Last question is, how can everyone, how can they get involved or follow, or what are next steps to stay up to date with what's going on with your org?
Yeah, well, website is a good way to start because you kind of see exactly what we do. So that's just creativefuturescollective.com. But as far as people getting involved, I mean, kind of going back to that, when, you know, people asking what they can do and me saying, you know, well, you have access, you have, you know, skills, you have knowledge, you have time, and you have a network, that stuff can all be super valuable. So for example, if you are looking to become a mentor in our program, and actually, you know, have an experience with someone, like be part of someone's life-changing experience. We're always looking for new mentors in the program. The other thing is, if you work at a company or you own a company that is looking to bring in, you know, become a more diverse and equitable place, we have talent that are looking for opportunities. So whether it's an internship, a futureship, a job, even if you don't run the company, you know, bang down the door of your CEO, bang down the HR department's door and say, we need different voices in the room. And this is our opportunity to make this a more equitable and welcoming place. So yeah, they're kind of the two ways. And then, you know, you can follow us on Instagram, again, Creative Futures Collective. But I would say they're the ways that people can help.
Awesome. Well, Helen, Charles, anything else? Any final thoughts? This has been so great.
Yeah. I mean, I personally know pretty much everything about it. So I don't have too many questions. That's why I just kind of wanted you guys to, I wanted to let the world know about it. So in our little way. So there you go.
Appreciate that, Charles. Thank you.
And no problem.
Thank you for the work that you do and, you know, just closely working with the ones who need it the most. I feel like that's just what makes you guys special, and just keep going. And I wish you guys the best, and thank you for joining our podcast.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. And hopefully maybe, you know, in the future we'll all be, you know, we can do a follow up and come see the work in real time. I would love that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Helen. And thanks, Robin, for having me.
Yeah, of course. All right. Well, goodbye, Dogtown. We'll talk soon.
See you, Dogtown.
This podcast is produced by Lensco in partnership with Safe Place for Youth and funded by the Department of Mental Health, Innovations 2.